Hello, I'm R.A. Spratt. I write and perform this podcast. If you'd like to support the show, I'm a children's author, so you can buy a book by me, or you can buy me a coffee by going to buymeacoffee.com/storiesrasspratt. It's an easy way to make a small thank you gift to the show so I can keep kicking this can down the road. The podcast directory you're using right now should have a link to my Buy Me a Coffee page in the show notes, or you can type it into your browser. That's buymeacoffee.com/storiesrasspratt. All contributions are gratefully appreciated. Hello and welcome to Bedtime Stories with me, R.A. Spratt. Well, it's wonderful to be here talking to you. There is a thunderstorm brewing outside as I record this, but I've left it incredibly late. It's now late on Tuesday afternoon, and this podcast episode has to drop at 6 a.m. tomorrow morning on the East Coast Australia time, so I've just got to get it done. So if you hear some thunder rumbling, they're not brilliantly engineered special effects. That's just the weather outside my office. Now, last week I made a whole bunch of announcements about my New Zealand tour, and I managed to get very confused and get a couple of things wrong, which probably isn't surprising given the enormous volume of work I've done over the last sort of 10 or 11 weeks. So I think I just managed to confuse myself because the tour has been so hastily organized and I've been putting it all together and I got a bit confused about what exactly I was doing. So just run over it. On the 30th of October, I will be at the Frankton Library in Queenstown at 3:30 p.m. On the 1st of November, I'm going to be at the Telling Tales Bookshop in Christchurch, New Zealand. That's the bit I got wrong. I said it was the Tall Tales Bookshop. It's the Telling Tales Bookshop at 4 p.m. And then on the 2nd of November, I'll be in Auckland, and that's where the big stage show is going to be, at the Pump House Theatre at 6 p.m. I'll be performing this podcast live on stage. Now, if you want to get tickets, there will be a link in the show notes, but you can also go to my website, raspratt.com. Okay, so that's all the things I messed up last week. Now let's get on to the big announcement for this week. So this week I'm announcing more live shows, but this is super exciting because this is the Christmas shows. I am going to be touring Christmas Stories with R.A. Spratt to three cities. I'm going to be doing the Glen Street Theatre in Sydney, the Clock Tower Theatre in Melbourne, and the Powerhouse Theatre in Brisbane. And I'm going to be doing my big one-hour storytelling spectacular where I tell my all-time favourite read-aloud story, which is Nanny Piggins Saves Christmas. I'm going to read the whole chapter. And when I say read, I'm going to be reciting because I've memorized it. And then I'll be telling a bunch of stories. And, you know, then I'm going to launch into my favorite Friday Barnes Christmas story, which is the one all about the stolen star. So it's going to be awesome. There'll be lots of audience interaction and there'll be books for sale if you want to get something signed afterwards. So yes, please, if you are in those three cities, do buy tickets. Again, you can check the show notes for the link to live shows, or you can go to my website, raspratt.com. It's in the upcoming events on the right-hand side of any page, but there's also like a live shows pull-down menu at the top of the page. All right, that's it. Now, let's get into the story today. It started raining. That's lovely. I love listening to rain. And let's just get into the story. It's a good one. Everyone's been really enjoying the Greek myths, so I thought I'd do another one. So today we're going to be doing The Legend of Achilles, as told by Nanny Piggins. Here we go. "Nanny Piggins, what's a helicopter parent?" asked Michael. "Why do you ask, my dear boy?" asked Nanny Piggins. "Well, the headmaster was talking about them today at assembly," said Michael. "Michael Green," admonished Nanny Piggins, "what have I told you about listening in assemblies?" "Don't do it, because I will exhaust my brain with fiddle-faddle, and I'd be much better off having a nice nap so I'm well rested and can run around like an idiot at lunchtime," said Michael. "Exactly," said Nanny Piggins. "The modern school curriculum doesn't devote nearly enough time to running around like an idiot. They say they want children to be fit and healthy, yet they won't let them run around with a stick trying to whack each other. Humans would save a fortune on gym memberships if they just found themselves a stick and a fast-moving person to try and hit with it."
"But violence is wrong, Nanny Piggins," Samantha reminded her.
"Of course it is," said Nanny Piggins, "but it isn't violence when it's in sport. If you took the violence out of boxing, it would just be two men in silk underwear walking in circles."
The children were silent for a moment as they considered the undeniable truth of this bizarre statement.
Anyway, said Michael, in assembly, the headmaster was talking about helicopter parents. He said it wasn't good to have our parents coming into school all the time making complaints, doing our schoolwork and solving all our problems.
Fortunately, you don't have to worry about that with your father, said Nanny Piggins.
No, he's pretty much the opposite of a helicopter parent, said Derek. More of a submarine parent, said Samantha.
A deep sea submarine parent, added Derek, whose engine has broken down and is stuck on the ocean floor.
Helicopter parents is a ridiculous expression anyway, said Nanny Piggins. To the best of my knowledge, helicopters don't have children, so they can't be parents at all. I think what the headmaster means by helicopter parents is a parent who's always involved in every aspect of their child's life, said Derek, and controlling everything they do.
Oh, said Nanny Piggins.
That's ironic then, because if that's what a helicopter parent is, then the greatest helicopter parent of all time was around long before the actual helicopter was invented.
They were? Asked Samantha.
Oh, yes, said Nanny Piggins, because the helicopter wasn't invented until 1939, whereas my great-great-great times 167 greats aunt Thesis Piggins was being overly involved and interfering in her child's life all the way back in the ancient Greek story days.
Who was Thetis? Asked Michael. I've never heard of her.
No, said Nanny Piggins, but you will have heard of her child, because she was the mother of Achilles.
Achilles, said Michael, as in the tendon on the back of your heel?
Yes, the back of your heel was named after him, said Nanny Piggins. But having a body part named after him was only one of the deeply impressive things Achilles did in his life.
I'm confused already, said Michael. Could you start at the beginning?
Of course, said Nanny Piggins. As with so many of the stories about my relatives in the ancient story times, it all began with Thetis being incredibly beautiful.
She was a Piggins, after all, said Derek.
Yes, and more than that, she was also a sea nymph, said Nanny Piggins.
What's a sea nymph? Asked Michael.
Well, it's just like a wood nymph, only wetter, said Nanny Piggins.
I don't think we really know what a wood nymph is either, admitted Samantha.
Well, a nymph is an incredibly beautiful young woman who frolics around, said Nanny Piggins. I don't think they had day jobs. They mainly frolicked. Sometimes they sang, sometimes they danced, sometimes they played a lyre or a flute. They were just generally alluring and attractive all day long. So, of course, the gods were always falling in love with them, because that's what the gods were always doing in the ancient story days.
Of course, agreed Derek.
Now, Thetis was the beautifulest of all the sea nymphs, so beautiful, in fact, that both Zeus and Poseidon fell in love with her, said Nanny Piggins.
Gosh, no, said Samantha, but they're both such rotters. A woman is usually doomed if either one of them falls in love with her. To have both fall in love with her must have been terrible.
It was certainly exhausting, said Nanny Piggins. But luckily, my dear Aunt Thetis had a good deal of common sense, so she had the good sense to be afraid.
Of Zeus, asked Michael.
No, someone even more terrifying, Zeus's wife. Hera. Hera was notoriously vengeful and malicious, so Thetis refused to marry Zeus, no matter how much he begged. Now Zeus, as we know, was a terrible rotter, said Samantha.
Yes, not a gentlemanly god at all, agreed Nanny Piggins.
When Thetis refused him, he threw a temper tantrum that would make a 2-year-old proud. He vowed if he could not marry Thetis, then none of the other gods could either.
Well, that's just selfish, said Michael.
It was probably for the best, said Nanny Piggins. Poseidon wasn't much of a gentleman either. Then, since Thetis couldn't marry a god, she had to settle for the next best thing, said Nanny Piggins. She married a king.
Good for her, said Samantha.
Yes, agreed Nanny Piggins, but you've got to understand, Thetis was the most beautiful sea nymph in the world, and all sea nymphs are beautiful, so she was seriously, alarmingly attractive. Thetis had been raised to have high expectations for herself, so when she was reduced to marrying a mere king, she was a bit put out. Sure, she got a palace and a crown and unlimited access to chocolate cake, but she wanted more. When Thetis had her first child, a son named Achilles, she wanted him to be every bit as good as the immortal gods up on Mount Olympus. Like any mother, she looked at her baby and she loved him so much. She never wanted to see him be injured or get sick. And most of all, she wanted to protect him so he would never, ever die.
But you can't protect a baby from everything, said Michael. They have runny noses all the time because they're always getting sick.
Not normally, no, but Thetis had a cunning plan, said Nanny Piggins. She snuck her baby down into Hades.
She took her baby down into the afterlife, asked Derek. Surely that's not a safe place to take a baby.
It was okay, said Nanny Piggins. She didn't take him across the River Styx to the actual afterlife. She just took him down to the bank of the River Styx. You see, Thetis knew that the River Styx had protective powers. Any part of her baby that was dipped into the river would forever be safe from injury.
Cool, said Michael.
But how did that work? Asked Samantha. What was it about the water in the River Styx that made it so magical?
Well, it wasn't water for a start, said Nanny Piggins.
What was it?
Not blood, asked Derek.
Don't be disgusting. That would be very unhygienic, said Nanny Piggins.
No, the River Styx flowed with the most magical substance on earth, the heavens, or even in the afterlife. It flowed with chocolate.
No way, said Michael.
Yes way, said Nanny Piggins. The purest, most delicious chocolate in the world.
Why was there a river of chocolate in the afterlife? Asked Michael.
Why not? Asked Nanny Piggins. Just because it's the afterlife doesn't mean they can't have some fun. Hades, god of the underworld, has to eat too, you know.
But I've never heard of there being a chocolate river in the afterlife before, said Derek.
No, they don't like to talk about it. Otherwise, everyone would want to go there. And it's crowded enough in the afterlife, what with all the bad people. They don't want lots of tourists flocking down there too.
So anyway, Thetis wanted her baby to be really thoroughly protected, so she took him right up to the riverbank, grabbed him by the ankle, and dipped him in the river.
She dunked her baby head first in a river, exclaimed Samantha.
Yes, I know. The social workers would never let you do something like that now, agreed Nanny Piggins. But there were no social workers in the ancient Greek story days. They were just the gods, and they were even worse than people. So good behaviour did not flourish. But the baby was okay. Being doused in chocolate did him no harm. In fact, it worked. From that moment on, the baby was impervious to any injury or disease. So Achilles thrived. He was never sick. No matter how rough or energetically he played, he was never injured.
In fact, you could hit him in the face with a hammer and would just bounce right off and hit you in the face, giving you a black eye instead.
As such, over the years, Achilles grew to be strong, athletic, and recklessly brave. Now, about this time, war flared up, and it was the most famous of all the ancient Greek wars. It was the Trojan War.
Oh, yeah, you told us about that one. It was the one started by apples.
Yes, a disagreement over apples led to Prince Paris of Troy running off with the most beautiful woman in the world, Helen, which really annoyed the Greek king who she was married to at the time.
And so war was declared. With all of Greece attacking Troy, Thetis was seriously concerned. Her son Achilles was super athletic and super good at beating people up, so she knew the Greeks would want him to fight for them. But she didn't want her beautiful boy to be endangered, so she hid him.
How do you hide a fully grown man? Asked Michael.
She took him to the island of Skyros. You see, the king of Skyros had 50 daughters, so Thetis dressed Achilles up as a girl and hid him amongst all the princesses.
And he agreed to that? Asked Derek.
Oh, it suited Achilles just fine, said Nanny Piggins. You see, Achilles liked the ladies. Living with 50 princesses and no other men around, he soon had lots of secret girlfriends. He had a wonderful time.
But meanwhile, things weren't going well for the Greeks over in the Trojan War. They were really struggling. There was one great general called Odysseus, or you might know him by the Roman version of his name, Ulysses. Anyway, Odysseus had heard of the young, invincible warrior, Achilles. He was just the man they needed. And Odysseus had heard a rumour that Achilles was hidden amongst the princesses at Skyros. So Odysseus dressed up as a peddler. They really liked dressing up in the ancient story days, didn't they? Said Derek.
Yes, indeed, said Nanny Piggins.
Odysseus went to the palace with beautiful cloth and jewellery to sell to the princesses. All 50 of the young women gathered round to admire his wares. As he laid them out on the floor, pretty dresses, necklaces, a skirt, bracelets, Odysseus subtly laid out amongst them a sword and shield as well.
Achilles had been pretending to admire the dresses along with the other princesses when he saw the sword and shield, and something came over him. He was drawn to the sword and shield like a tractor beam. He had to hold them in his hands. Then, as soon as Achilles held the sword in his hand, he had to swing it about to imagine how good it would feel to be chopping people's heads off. And to a ridiculously overconfident youth like Achilles, that felt wonderful. As soon as he took the sword, Odysseus knew he had found the great invincible Achilles. He begged Achilles to come and fight with him and the rest of the Greeks, but Thetis burst out upon them.
What was she doing there? Asked Derek. If Achilles was dressed up as a princess to hide amongst the princesses, was Thetis doing the same thing?
No, 51 princesses instead of 50 was one thing, but 52 would not go unnoticed, said Nanny Piggins. No, Thetis had hidden herself as a potted plant.
A potted plant? Asked Samantha.
Yes, an aspidistra, said Nanny Piggins. She could always pass herself off as a very lovely aspidistra. It was quite a talent. Anyway, she quickly threw off her aspidistra disguise and confronted her son.
What are you thinking? She cried. You can't go to war. It's too dangerous. All those men running around with sharp swords and pointy spears. If they don't kill you, they'll definitely have your eye out.
Oh, but Mum, protested Achilles, I'm totally invincible, remember? You dipped me in a river especially.
Oh, Achilles, said Thetis, just because you're invincible doesn't mean you should take a lot of silly risks. The gods had a prophecy about you, you know.
Here we go, said Achilles, rolling his eyes. Whenever he got in trouble with his mother, she always started claiming it was a prophecy from the gods that he had to listen to her.
It has been foretold. You will either gain glory and die young, or live a long and uneventful life in obscurity.
Well, that decision's easy, said Achilles. I want glory.
And so Achilles went with Odysseus and joined the fight against the Trojans.
How did that go? Asked Derek.
Well, slowly, said Nanny Piggins. It was a very drawn-out war. For the Greeks, there was a lot of sitting around on the beach bickering over who had been the least honourable in the last battle and how they could regain their honour in the next battle. But it all got very nasty when Agamemnon, the general in charge of all the Greek armies, had to return a slave he had stolen. Now, Agamemnon did not like being down a slave, so he demanded that Achilles, a general under his command, give him one of his slaves to make up for it. Achilles got really mad about that, because he had come to love his slave. Her name was Briseis, and she was very good at making baklava, which is a delicious, sticky, nutty pastry. And when you meet a pastry chef that good, you'd be a fool not to fall in love with them. And Achilles was not a fool. Well, actually he was, but he fell in love with her anyway.
She was his slave? That doesn't sound like a very healthy basis for a relationship, said Samantha.
No, agreed Nanny Piggins. By no stretch of the imagination was Achilles a good boyfriend. But that's another story.
The main thing is, losing his girlfriend and the prospect of all that future baklava made Achilles really, really sulky.
If you steal my girlfriend, then that's it, declared Achilles. I'm not going to fight for you in your silly war.
And he went off to his tent to sulk.
Wow, that's not very heroic, said Derek.
No, but Achilles didn't care. He fully committed to a good sulk.
Now, Achilles had a good friend called Patroclus, and they were the bestest besties to ever be best friends. Patroclus tried to reason with Achilles. There was going to be a big battle the next day, and they really needed Achilles because he was better at fighting than anyone else in the world. But Achilles was apparently also better at sulking than anyone else in the world too, so he said no.
Patroclus tried to make the best of a difficult situation. He asked if instead he could borrow Achilles' golden armor so he could pretend to be Achilles and inspire all the men.
More dressing up, observed Derek.
Indeed, said Nanny Piggins.
So, wearing the golden armour of Achilles, Patroclus led the troops into battle. This is where the problem arises, because in the golden armour, Patroclus looked exactly like Achilles. Everyone thought he was Achilles. When Hector,
the bravest Trojan soldier of all, saw who he thought was Achilles, he attacked. And because it wasn't actually Achilles, it was just everyday regular Patroclus, whose mother had not dipped him in any magical rivers as a child, when you stabbed Patroclus with a sword, he died. And that is exactly what he did.
Oh, that's terrible, said Samantha.
Yes, when Achilles found out, he was devastated. His earlier sulking tantrum was nothing compared to the temper tantrum he threw next. He kicked things, he threw things, he lay face down on the floor and beat the ground with his hands and feet simultaneously.
Which is actually a tremendously good ab workout, by the way. If you've never done it before, you should try it.
Then, when he was tired of all of that, Achilles got up and declared he was going to go over to Troy and kill Hector the next day.
And this is where Thetis intervened again.
Well, what was she doing there? Asked Michael. He took his mum to battle with him? Asked Derek.
Yes, the historical poems and jugs of the day do not explain the exact mechanics of it, said Nanny Pickens. Perhaps she dressed up as a soldier or a soldier's horse. Anyway, Thetis whipped off her disguise and begged her son to wait. She pointed out that Achilles couldn't challenge anyone to battle because he didn't have any armour anymore.
Hector had stolen his golden armour from Patroclus the day before.
Thetis just wanted her boy to be safe, so she told him to wait a minute while she went away and made him some more armour.
She made him armour? Asked Samantha.
Yes, and she used the strongest substance known to man.
What, steel? Asked Derek.
No.
Gold? Asked Samantha.
No.
Molten magma from the Earth's core? Asked Michael.
No, although that's a jolly good idea. I'll jot that one down. I wouldn't mind trying that one day.
Then what? Asked Samantha.
Caramel, said Nanny Piggins.
Caramel, asked Derek.
Of course, said Nanny Piggins. Think about it. You've had my solid caramel candy apples.
You mean the ones that contain no apple, only candy? Asked Derek.
Yes. They're almost impossible to eat, said Samantha.
The last time I ate one, I couldn't speak for 3 days because it stuck my teeth together, added Michael.
Exactly, said Nanny Piggins. Thetis made the armour out of that, and she made a sword out of a huge peppermint candy cane, too.
When she was done, Achilles had the finest armour ever made and the finest blade.
The Sword of Achilles. With these things, he would be truly invincible. And he was. Achilles went straight over to the city of Troy and challenged Hector to a duel.
Hector realised he hadn't really killed Achilles the day before. He just made Achilles angrier than anyone had ever been before in the history of the world. So he did what any sensible soldier would do.
He surrendered, asked Michael.
No, even more sensible, said Nanny Piggins. He made a run for it.
Hector took off running, and Achilles chased after him. He chased Hector around and around the city of Troy 3 times before he caught up with him. Now, Hector was the greatest fighter the Trojans had ever had, but Achilles was in such a terrible rage. Hector knew it was hopeless. He knew Achilles would never spare him. All Hector could do was beg Achilles not to desecrate his body. But Achilles was so mad, he refused to agree to even that. He killed Hector, then drew silly pictures on his face with a Sharpie to teach him a lesson. All the Greek soldiers cheered. Hooray! Achilles had defeated the bravest Trojan soldier of them all, which meant no one could beat Achilles. They were bound to win the war now. But they'd misjudged the situation. You see, Achilles had only beaten the bravest Trojan soldier. He had not beaten the most cowardly Trojan soldier. And cowards can be every bit as dangerous as heroes in their own way. And it just so happened that the Trojan army had an extra especially cowardly coward called Paris.
You mean the one who started it all?
Indeed. Was the city of Paris named after him? Asked Michael.
No, Paris the city is not named after Paris the ancient Greek coward, said Nanny Piggins. Paris the city is named after my cousin, Paris Piggins, and that's an entirely different story.
In fact, Paris the ancient Greek coward wasn't really called Paris either. That was a fake name. His real name was Bramwell.
You mean a distant male relative of yours?
Yes, he was Hector's brother, and Paris didn't really want to die or get injured or even break a fingernail. He was famous from running away from all battles and all fights at every opportunity. But he was also really good at shooting a bow and arrow, because he didn't mind standing a very long way away and shooting at an enemy. That way, if he missed, he had a good head start on the running away. After his brother's death, Paris knew he'd get in trouble with his dad if he didn't do something. So he called out to Achilles.
Hey, you, Achilles!
Achilles turned around and Paris shot his arrow. Achilles watched it fly through the sky and he laughed.
As if your puny arrow could hit me. I am mighty Achilles. I am invulnerable to all injury.
It wasn't even a good shot. Paris had aimed for Achilles' head, but Paris wasn't very strong. The arrow was going to fall short. It wasn't even going to hit his chest or his leg. Achilles was laughing so hard at the puny shot, he didn't even step out of the way when the arrow was headed for his foot, and it hit him, bang, right in the heel.
Ow! Cried Achilles. What was that?
Achilles had never had an injury before. He'd never even scraped his knee riding a bicycle. He'd never fallen and hurt his hand. He'd never accidentally bitten his tongue while eating a hamburger. He was horrified by how much it hurt having an arrow embedded in his heel.
Ow, 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 he cried, Achilles. What's this red stuff squirting everywhere?
It was blood, and Achilles was losing a lot of it.
I don't feel well, said Achilles. Not at all.
And with that, he dropped dead. All because when his mother dipped him into the river Styx as a baby, she'd held him by the ankle. So the one part of his body not to go into the magical chocolate was his heel. It was the only place on his body he could be hurt. And so the great Achilles was slain by the cowardly Paris, in spite of his mother being the greatest helicopter parent of all time. The end. Time for bed.
But that's a terrible story, said Samantha.
Yes, so many lessons to be learned, said Nanny Piggins, although I'm not sure what they are. Don't dip your baby in a river, suggested Derek.
Don't take your mum into battle, said Samantha.
Don't let your best friend wear your armour, added Michael.
Don't hide with 50 princesses, added Derek.
Don't take slaves, said Samantha. And don't date ancient Greek gods, added Michael.
Yes, you see so many lessons, said Nanny Piggins. It's a very educational story.
The end. All right, well, let's leave it there. Thank you for listening. That was a long one. That was actually one of my mother's favourite stories when I was a child. She loved telling me that story. I think she really liked the idea of holding a child by its ankles and dipping them in a river. That tells you something about my mother's sense of humour. Anyway, don't forget all the live shows that are coming up in New Zealand and all the Christmas shows that are coming up in December in Sydney, Melbourne and Brisbane. Check out my website for the dates and how to get tickets. That's rasprat.com. Okay, that's it for now. Until next time, goodbye.